Hello everyone, my name is Jacob Minig. I am the host of the podcast Behavioral Health Integration. Today we have a very special guest, psychiatrist Dr. Fred Maas. Dr. Fred has had a host of life experiences, including, among other things, being a two-time college dropout and a Northwestern University medical student graduate in 1988. Dr. Fred has committed to the notion that communication, connection, and creativity and conversation are at the heart of all healing, all conditions of all types. Without this, people simply do not heal. With it, miracles regularly occur. Voices heal. Listening heals. We humans are best when we are connected to others, and Dr. Fred's life's mission has now become to assure that all people know that who they are and what they do matters, and their voices, and no matter where they are from or where they are going, can be heard.
Well, again, it's a pleasure having you on, Dr. Maas. I usually like to start off my the early parts of the interview is, what originally got you passionate to be in this field? What sparked your interest?
All right. We can definitely do that. Are we recording? You ready to go now?
Yep.
Okay. All right. So, I was born to be a communicator. And so, you know, in 1958, when I was born, my family was in a fair amount of disarray and chaos, at least that's what they tell me. And they were counting on me to pop out and bring joy and peace and happiness and communication and connection to them.
Okay.
So I've had a full-time job since that first second when I arrived on Earth, and that was to bring joy and peace and happiness to people. Mm-hmm. And there they were, you know, probably not liking each other so much. I had a brother 10 years older than me and 14 years older than me. But I saw that I could really bring peace. I could really make them laugh, and I could really give them, you know, joy.
Yeah.
So I saw that the key here was communication. And, you know, I really wanted to be a master communicator. I literally remember being in my playpen, looking at the adults speaking and thinking, I want to be a very good speaker one day because I could tell that it's going to help. So I would watch them and, you know, it's like, okay, someday I'm going to go to school. Well, with brothers that age, they taught me how to be pretty precocious. I knew how to read and write and do some simple math, adding and subtracting, and even a little bit of multiplication when I went into kindergarten. And not very many of my classmates could do that. You know,
I mean,
it's not like they couldn't do it. It's the kids can do it, but my brothers actually taught me how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So those kids were like picking their nose and throwing blocks at each other. And here I was wanting to read. Now, the truth is, I was also picking my nose and throwing blocks, but I wanted to read. And I really wanted to communicate. So it wasn't going to happen in kindergarten. So I dreamed of the later years, maybe when I was a big kid, fourth grade or something, I would learn how to communicate. It didn't happen when I got into fourth grade either. So, you know, then I was like, okay, maybe it'll happen at junior high, or maybe it'll happen in high school. And both those places didn't work very well either. So I went to college at the University of Michigan because I love the helmets. And I started really noticing that school isn't made to teach people how to communicate. School is made to sit there and watch a professor say and do things that you never could ever understand unless you studied it, and then study it to the point where you could regurgitate it back exactly as they said it. And if you did that was called passing.
Yep.
Well, that's also called the end of a conversation.
Yes.
So I really, really rejected that. And I dropped out of college and, you know, went around the country to find out what my life was about. And then I did. I went to Berkeley, California, and did learn a lot about my life, but I didn't have a job. So I came back to school one more time in Ann Arbor. And boom, same shit. This time I was learning computers because I thought I would get a quick fix of the job that worked. The only computer in all of Michigan was at the University of Michigan. It was a 2-acre facility. You could stay up all day, all night, punch cards and a whole deal. And that sucked too. So I left again. I dropped out of skin. And this is when my real, you know, when I say I've been in the field for 40 years, this is when it started. I got hired at a state mental health facility for adolescent boys. And I began to communicate for a living. And here I was talking to those kids. Well, they weren't really kids. They're only like 6 years younger than me. Like, you know, like the people who were going through life like me, not knowing what they were doing and just learning every step along the way. And I could stay curious, and I was healing them, and they were healing me. So I really loved that part of the job, but I hated the way psychiatry was treating these kids, because when one of them stayed up too late or got in a fight, psychiatrists would come down from their call room with this little weapon, this like a weapon, and they would talk to the kid for like 5 seconds, then talk to us, this childcare worker, and maybe the nurse, and then write something in the chart. Then we'd have to go find the kid, hold him down, and then fill him with a hip full of injectable antipsychotic sedative medicine. And we did that over and over again. And frankly, that's been going on and still is going on in hospitals today. Yep. No question. I found that to be so barbaric and unacceptable that I made it my decision that taking a kid out of his misery by making it so he can't communicate is not therapy.
Absolutely.
So I decided, my brother was already a psychiatrist, my older brother. I decided I would go into psychiatry for that purpose so that I could bring communication back and, you know, to the mental health field. And I, boom, right back into school for the third time. And this time I stuck it through and got graduated and went to, you know, Northwestern University Medical School. And I became a psychiatrist. I went to, you know, and then became a child and adolescent psychiatrist. And then I've been doing that for 30 years. And my sole purpose for doing it was to bring communication forward. But unfortunately, while I was in medical school, a drug called Prozac was introduced to the world. And when Prozac was introduced, that changed everything. All of a sudden, we had chemical imbalances and biological psychiatry. Conversation and communication was no longer a psychiatric job. So now there I was in my dream job, but communication was being squeezed out. And medications were now being squeezed in. So now I had this weapon.
Okay.
This was horrible for me for a number of years. I couldn't believe I wrote for over 100,000 prescriptions.
Wow.
And I did, but each one hurt me, as you would guess. I hated them from the beginning. That's why I went into the field.
So when you started med school, were you saying like early on, they actually tried to teach you like talk therapies and then it just shifted to more prescriptions?
In 1984, when I started medical school, psychiatry was still sort of a communication field. By 1987, when I was in my third year, it had Prozac entered and that changed everything.
Why is that, you think?
Why is it that Prozac changed everything?
Yeah, what was like the main, do you think it's just easier to control people by maybe numbing them, or was it a financial greed?
I think that there's a lot of reasons for this. I think that the the medical industrial complex is a bold and beautiful complex. I mean, we're looking at it a lot today, these days, all these people pretending to be doctors or virologists or epidemiologists or all the shit that people pretend to be. So the medical industrial complex is a very well funded agency. And the idea of, you know, really taking advantage of people who think there's something wrong with them and now confirming that there is. So when people are anxious or depressed or nervous or fearful or hopeless or scattered, all these feelings, they go to a doctor now and the doctor will confirm that there's something wrong with them. In fact, there's nothing wrong with them. That's called being human. But we're not, as doctors, we're not even allowed to write no diagnosis.
Oh, man.
So if we write no diagnosis, we won't get paid. The only way we get paid by third parties is we write a diagnosis. So every time you go to a psychiatrist, you are getting a diagnosis. And if you're getting a diagnosis and you're told that there's something wrong with you, and if there's something wrong with you and you agree that there is, and then we have something to make you write called the pill, then you're going to think that's a good idea. And you know what's really good about that is you get to relinquish responsibility for that part of your life that you're doing that you have shame or blame about.
Yep.
Like if I keep yelling at my wife, or I keep, you know, missing deadlines, or I keep buying shit I don't need, I can blame that on my mental illness.
Yep.
And that's not me. That's my bipolar. That's not me. That's my ADHD. That's not me. That's my social phobia. That's not me. That's my post-traumatic stress disorder. That's not me. That's my narcissistic personality disorder.
You know, Dr. Moss, that's so interesting. Like going through therapy grad school and everything, a lot of my fellow students, you know, we would have issues, not me in particular, but they would be working at these hospitals, whatever. And as a therapist, their clients would be on at least five to six different antipsychotics. but they don't have the authority or power to take them off those, even though, again, we don't have MD next to our names, but we really think it has a strong effect on their healing process in general when you have all these medications. But there's a tug of war, you know?
Yeah. You know, what's really interesting about that is that doctors, is that you don't need, it's kind of a secret that when I discovered it, I realized it's not much of a secret. You don't need a doctor to come off medication.
Okay. It's advised not to, though, right? Or
that, and I'm not. Here's the other thing for your listeners: under no circumstances am I saying that you should try to come off your medicine without talking to your doctor.
Mm-hmm.
All I'm saying, and especially don't ever come off your medicine if you found the right medicine and it's working for you.
Okay.
Never. If you are sure that you're at the best place you're ever going to be in your life, then please don't change anything. If you found something that's really working, you know your diagnosis and you're taking your medicine, you love it, it's the best, your life couldn't be better. Well then, absolutely, more power to you. Please stay on your medicine. I mean it. There's nothing wrong with that. If whatever you find in life that works, you should keep doing. But for the people who are pretty sure that these medicines aren't working for them, or that they're not that particular diagnosis, or, you know, that they're being limited or disempowered by carrying around the diagnosis or the treatment, there are options to take forth that can have you come off of medicines and maybe even lose your diagnosis altogether and get your life back.
Yep.
So yeah, it's advised. Who advises it? Well, those people whose life depends on you staying with a diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
So it's tricky, right? Like it, we thought, oh, Dr. Moss, that's so radical. It's like, it's so interesting that coming off of medicines is radical and going on medicines isn't.
Mm-hmm.
Like, think about that. It's like, which one of those two is really radical?
Mm-hmm. Well, you're listening to your body too, right?
Right. Exactly. Yeah, so your body's saying this shit sucks and it makes me worse. I'm fat, I'm drooling, I'm too tired, I can't think straight, I don't have any moods anymore, I can't have sex, you know, all those things. And no, I don't like this shit. And you could be, oh, but the doctor made me take it, so I'm going to take it every day for the rest of my life. Okay. Or you could get, you know what, this shit's not working for me.
Right.
I guess it takes courage to say that, but are you like, how many lives do you have here? I think you only have one life to live. So are you ready to just pour it down the drain for, you know, taking something that's making it worse? If you're not ready to do that, if you're ready to kind of take a new lease on life, that's when, you know, we could talk. We could really talk about the possibility. Look, I when I take new clients on, I'm not their doctor. I don't ever write any orders anymore.
Okay.
I don't even give people diagnoses anymore.
That's pretty cool. I like that, though.
Yeah.
Well, that label, though, like you said, is so powerful. I mean, it really sticks with people for years and years and years.
Yeah, forever. You know, I'm bipolar. How many people have you heard? I'm bipolar, or I got major depression.
And what I heard, like, that is the most overly diagnosed disorder in the United States, at least, is bipolar 1.
Yeah, bipolar 1. I think there's a lot of them these days, you know, some of them that are coming around the corner, maybe, you know, Win Play Show is, you know, ADHD is overused, certainly. Post-traumatic stress disorder is overused, certainly. Yep. And then these days, the sexiest one are in the autistic spectrum disorders.
Yes.
That people really like those.
Oh, God, there's many theories on that one, too, even But no, you know, I find it interesting that you said, let's say ADHD, PTSD. Tell me what you think of this theory now. Some people believe that ADHD or ADD doesn't really exist. It's more involving childhood trauma. And has a lot to do with, let's say, the prefrontal cortex and how that is affected through trauma throughout the years. So then it makes, or the trauma itself causes chemical imbalances, which makes you more hyperactive when it comes to the trauma. But is that your body just saying, hey, I don't know if I'm safe right now? And then you have those type of reactions. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that That's one way to look at it. I certainly can consider that one. Another way to look at it is ADHD is actually a gift. It's a gift of realizing that sitting still and doing one task at a time isn't what we came here to do. And that it's really quite okay to stay entirely active and to have multiple things going on, because that's life, bro. That's just life, you know. And you know, attention deficit is not a deficit at all. In fact, it could be that you just pay attention to so many things because there is hyper-stimulus in this world. And maybe ADHD are just the people who didn't buy the shit that they should have sat in their chair the whole time and tried to pay attention to boring stuff on a chalkboard.
Well, it's like you're sticking out, you know. We want the perfect child to be the student that could sit down, learn, get straight A's. That's what I guess we want in society to model. Like you said, we don't look at the fact that ADD is a gift. It could be something good. No, instead we throw those kids in special ed for their most of their like junior high school career. It's horrible.
It is. Yeah. And, you know, they're there with other people who think poorly of themselves. And all of a sudden you really have created a subculture of kids who think that they're being disenfranchised ostracized. Learning how to be like, learning how to use their energies negatively, like, you know, learning how to be little petty criminals or take drugs or, you know, skip school or smoke cigarettes, all that shit that, you know, sometimes happens with that. And then they get started on very powerful drugs. That's the other thing. You know, these stimulants are extremely addicting, addicting. So, you know, the street drug that Adderall has become, for instance, is overwhelming. You know, there is way more Adderall being used by people who have no prescription for it than the people who have prescription for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, what are your thoughts on maybe like sticking to that? Could Adderall be good for some people to an extent?
Well, it's a really good question. And when you throw in to an extent, it makes me think that, you know, heroin can be good for people to an extent. And so cocaine, certainly, and then even methamphetamines can be good. You know, anything can be good to an extent. The problem with Adderall is that Adderall is, and all the stimulants actually create the symptoms they're marketed to treat frequently. So if you don't have ADHD and you start taking Adderall, within a little while, you will have ADHD. Okay. You'll have all the symptoms associated, and it's actually caused by the treatment.
Mm-hmm.
So these medicines often perpetuate or cause the treatment they're marketed to deal with. Mm-hmm. And it's not the medicine's fault, by the way. It's not like the makers of the medicine are the problem. And it's not even like the doctors are the problem. And it's not even like the, you know, hospitals or insurance companies are the problem. And it's not like the people are the problem. But the idea is it's a system. It's a well-tuned system to have people spending literally billions of dollars per day to get their psychiatric medicines.
And insurance.
That's why there's more pharmacies than there are McDonald's, which both of them suck. I mean, they're both in FDA. You know, they're both Food and Drug Administration is called the Food and Drug Administration because they both the same thing. The food and, you know, our food, our McDonald's is the same shit as as drugs, you know. So
have you ever seen The Pharmacist, the Netflix series?
What's it called?
The Pharmacist.
I think I have seen it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's about doctors overprescribing opioid medication. Actually, it's more about the salesman too overselling it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Doctors willing to buy it. Very fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it is, again, that's not where the action is. The action is if you went to a car shop, and you were like, hey, my car's not running good. And the guy said, okay, put sugar in the gas tank. Yeah. My guess is you wouldn't like go buy a bag of sugar and put it in the gas tank.
Mm-hmm.
So even though we know that these medications cause massive problems, we take them anyways because we believe that doctors have our best interest. And why do we believe that? Well, it's not because there's nothing. I love doctors, man. I mean, I think doctors are the best, except we were taught as doctors to walk around as if we know what the hell we're talking about.
There's power.
And you guys believe us. You guys believe us. We learned how to be really like certain when we're uncertain.
But it's that MD. It's that MD at the end of your name. Oh, did you go to med school? No. Okay, shut up.
Exactly. That's exact. Oh, I yeah. And I've used that line before when I was like more active. Like, oh, I see. You went to med school then, right? And then said no. And I said, okay, well, anyways.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that just means I'm smarter than you. You're an idiot. When it isn't true, actually. Mm-hmm. I'm not smart. So who gives a shit that I went to medical school? If you got something to say, it's probably smarter than anything I have to say. So most doctors haven't lost that. And it's bred for, you know, it's bred for us to be very believable and very dogmatic when we say what we think we know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, nothing wrong with that. You know, it's the opportunity exists for those people who really feel like, you know, that their diagnosis isn't serving them, to relook at that diagnosis, to really start looking at, are you ready to relinquish yourself from the diagnosis? Because it's not simple. It changes your identity. The coming off the medicines can be difficult. Mm-hmm. It's not life-threatening, but it can be troubling, and you can get your life back if that's what you want. It's definitely available.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it really is. And oh man, so I know you talk a lot about well, how about this? Have you again ever heard of the man Carl Rogers before?
Yeah, I love Carl Rogers.
Oh yeah, because the moment that you brought up, hey, you know, like, heroin's good to an extent, or cocaine is. And it's so funny. When I first heard his video, I'm like, I like this guy. I like his way of thinking. But when I play it for my clients at the treatment center, it gets mixed reviews because there's so many different, let's say, models, right?
Yeah.
12 steps, NA or CBT or whatever. And a lot of my clients will get pissed at me. They're like, well, listening to this guy, now you're pretty much saying I can drink and it's okay. It's like, I don't think he's saying that. All right. He gets misinterpreted a lot, wouldn't you say? He gets misinterpreted a lot, right? People don't always take his information in the correct way.
Yeah. He's just speaking his mind, you know, just like Ram Dass. He's just speaking from the floor, man. He's just, you know, he's just saying the truth, that basic truth of humanity.
Mm-hmm.
I like the guy. I like how he's standing. He's fun to watch.
He is. He's, I think I first saw him with Joe Rogan.
Mm.
And I got one of his books.
Rogan had Carl Rogers on. Is that what you're saying? Wow. That's awesome. I haven't checked that out. I didn't see that.
Also, here's another thought. Have you ever heard of the concept? So did you know that clinical psychologists right now are trying to get prescriptions rates in this country?
Uh-huh.
And there's a huge battle going on. I think only 5 states allow it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the clinical psychologist has to obviously go through his doctorate program, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then they got to get a master's degree in psychopharmacology. And then I think they have to pass a licensing test.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how do you feel about that? And
I let's see how to answer that. A psychiatrist doesn't use any of his med school skills to prescribe medicine.
Okay.
There's no med school skill. There's nothing special. I mean, yeah, here's what a psychiatrist says. Yes, that's what a psychiatrist says.
Mm-hmm.
Doctor, can we start him on some Ativan? Yes. Doctor, can we start him on some Seroquel? Yes. Doctor, can we start him on Depakote? Yes. Can we, you know, it's like, in some ways, we're really pressed by the team to pick the medicine that, you know, that they feel is right. Oh, the doctor, he has racing thoughts, or he has flight of ideas, or he has pressured speech, or he has, you know, like a depressed mood, or he's, you know, impending doom, or whatever they say, you know, little buzzwords. And we all know which medicines come on the backside of those symptoms.
Yep.
Now, are psychologists just the problem with this is, if I ask you, what's the difference, maybe not you, but some people, what's the difference between a psychologist and a psychiatrist?
The medications.
Exactly.
The power.
Exactly. That's all that we have left, you see, for our own identity at this point.
Oh, okay.
So if we give up that, it is like our last vestige of an identity. If in fact we're not, why would people come to a psychiatrist ever?
Without the power to give meds, what are you?
Oh, Why would they come to us? What do we do better than everyone else? We don't do anything else better than everyone else.
Do you think, is that one of the reasons why psychiatry maybe gets a bad name in the medical field, as in like the different avenues you go down when it comes to choice and stuff? I've heard psychiatry sometimes get a bad name compared to family medicine, et cetera.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that if you're a psychiatrist and you choose to only talk to people, you never do a physical exam, you don't know anything about medical issues. You don't know about drug-drug interactions, or you don't know how to, use a stethoscope, or, you don't know how to handle any kind of trauma. If you're just like coming there and just talk to the patient, then I could see where a doctor who thinks they're doing a lot more than that might, want to diminish the impact of a psychiatrist. The truth is, when you're out there as a psychiatrist, and I made it my business when I was doing clinical work, that when you can keep in touch with the medical issues that are there, when you can actually, be aware of how to treat, seizures, or how to treat gastroenteritis, or how to treat, acute pain or any of those things, then a psychiatrist is no longer getting a bad rap. They're just like one of us doctors. And then, so I always found that the fact that I was capable of elbowing up, being shoulder to shoulder with family practitioners and general practitioners and surgeons and ophthalmologists and radiologists, there's something like the little brotherhood that we had that we created in medical school. If you just kind of live with it as a fraternity of brothers and sisters who went to medical school, then maybe you don't get a bad rap. You get a bad rap when you're not doing your job. Mm-hmm. And, the surgeons are like, oh, he's just a psychiatrist. And my answer to that is, oh, he's just a surgeon, whatever,
Yeah. Right back at him.
Yeah.
Oh, and kind of reverting back to the psychologist trying to get the power, it's not even so much like the money thing, because I'm just assuming they're going to probably get more money. And let's be honest, for a lot of people, that makes the world go around. It's the ability just to take them off their meds. Do you have to say to, okay, I don't care about putting you on. I want to be able to analyze you. And be like, okay, you don't need this. You don't need that, and slowly take you off meds.
Interesting. Well, like I said, ultimately, you don't need a doctor to do that either. Although most people do listen to an MD for that. There's no MD training in coming off of medicine.
Not even like a tapering off style or technique.
No, tapering doesn't take you off medicine. Tapering only. What tapering typically does is it leaves open enough time for something to happen where you decide that, you're coming off of Xanax or something. And then 3 weeks later you run over your cat and you're like, holy shit, I never ran over the cat until I was, detoxing from Xanax. So, I better go back to Xanax. And then, it just takes the time. It gives you an opportunity to live life and then, blame the tapering for the problem, so you come flying back to the medication and never give it up again.
Oh yeah. Well, it's all about like life tasks, life skills, and things that we need to like go through life. Life is life. And there's this documentary called I don't know if it's Prescription RX, but it was based on our children in our lifetime right now growing up with prescriptions and not knowing to handle and take medications, are not knowing to live life without medications, right? And there's this one example or a couple where the psychiatrist or whatever was talking, and this little girl, 8 years old, she was sad because, let's say, her friend Becky is moving. So let's put her on antidepressants. It's like, no, the psychiatrist is trying to explain, that's just a part of life. It's sad. People move away. You have to manage to get through it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, all of that's why I developed Welcome to Humanity. Welcome to Humanity is really a self-explanatory, just means that all of human experience is just human experience, including the pain and misery, the suffering, the intolerable, the unspeakable, all those things that are unpleasant or uncomfortable are also just equally part of the gift that, if I dare say, the gift of being human. And dealing with all the pleasant stuff too. We think that in order to be in a good shape, we should only be living pleasantly. Well, That's just insane, actually. I mean, life is life and there's pain. Yeah. So,
well, isn't it more too about, let's say if they are going through hardships, let's say, you know, your parents and maybe your child's getting bullied at school or whatever, wouldn't it be more important? Okay. They got to get through it, but then teaching them like self-confidence, self-worth, assertiveness, again, like you said, communication to stand up for yourself.
Right. So it's not simple. You know, these are difficult times and you get, you know, bullying is a really tough one. I can't even imagine. I'm so glad that it was not a great big part of my school experience because it's horrible. It's so effing horrible. You know, we think that the biggest problems in the world are the ones that get the most press, like, you know, COVID or sex trafficking or, you know, racism or climate change or even war. And all of those things are dwarfed by the fact that we aren't able to speak our true voice anymore. And when we, you know, why do I say that? I mean, all those things are threats to the entire planet. They're not small and I'm not diminishing any of them, but we're not going to be able to get on the other side of any of those if we can't actually speak our true self. And so there's a real opportunity to speak our true self. Now, the trouble with bullying is that that's one of the early things that really teaches kids how not to speak their true self because, you know, a bully will do what he does. And then tell the bullied that if you say anything, we're going to kick your ass or we're going to kill your sister or we're going to, you know, whatever they're going to do. And it really teaches people how not to speak our truth. So it's very, very, very toxic.
And not only that, especially with the internet, it's a lot of these poor kids, they have nowhere to go that's safe.
Right.
You know, it's not just the schools anymore. It's like when you get home and you got like Facebook posts or Twitter or whatever, you know, coming after them.
Yeah, it's really horrible. Really horrible. Yep. Super sad.
And by the way, when I say Dr. Carl Rogers, I meant Dr. Carl Hart.
Oh, okay.
Well, that's a different guy. Rogers was like the famous, you know, psychologist way back.
Yeah, I thought he had passed. That's why when you said he was with Rogan, I was like, okay, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Well, hey, do you want to explain a little bit more about your programs and then your passion project too?
Yeah. So the program I have is, you know, the book I wrote, I know it's shocking to people. It's called Find Your True Voice.
Yep.
And Find Your True Voice is a book that really goes deeper into really helping people get to their core authenticity. I call myself the doctor of authenticity. Okay. And I do transformational restorative coaching where I help people either get out of the mental health system if they're just barely in it or want to get out, or I, you know, prevent people from going in because as the undoctor, I undiagnose, unmedicate, and then undoctrinate people. So I call myself a transformational restorative coach in that lines, but really other things that I do is I teach podcasting. I love teaching podcasting after people find their voice. You know, probably the best way to get that voice out there these days in the whole world is through podcasting. So we take people from zero to podcaster in a 12-week course. It's really wonderful.
Nice.
And then move podcasters from podcasting to broadcasting in our next course, where we really show them how to distribute and promote. You know, that might be like they have a podcast that's not doing as well as they would hope. And they really just want to monetize it. And they want to, you know, give it some degree of scalability or sustainability. We do that as well. I like expert speaking. I speak at Rotary gigs and I like being a guest on podcasts. So in the end, I'm finally my dream come true, like I said, when I was a kid. And that is that my life is all about communicating effectively and helping others communicate effectively. And isn't that true that 64 years ago, that was my calling and I finally figured out how to do this shit. Yeah.
So I got to ask you, when you were first taking your clients, and have you ever worked with someone who was, say, quote unquote, like diagnosed with some of like the severe disorders like schizoaffective, schizophrenia?
I have had 40,000 patients. So.
Wow. Okay.
Certainly the answer is yes to that.
Is there any type of skills you should apply to different clients then to help them reach their goals or different approaches?
Well, you know, when people have what we think are more serious psychiatric conditions like schizoaffective disorder or schizophrenia or whatever, it's not clear that the medicines and the treatment aren't also perpetuating the symptoms. So sometimes these people, you know, we think we don't hear voices, for instance. We think they hear voices and we don't.
Yep.
What I'd like you to do is just be quiet for a moment and ask yourself, you know, are you hearing voices? And the voice that's in the back of your head right now that's telling you that you're not hearing voices, no, you're not, that's a voice.
Yes.
That's what a voice is.
So you're quote unquote crazy and you need to go to a mental health hospital, right?
Maybe, or maybe the people who are actually honest enough to come to a mental health hospital and let them know that they're hearing voices, because we all are the ones that we then just nab and then get them full of medications like we did with the kids at the child care center at the, you know, at the state hospital. Maybe schizophrenia can be in many ways enhanced by the treatment that we give that condition. It's not at all clear that schizophrenia is what we think it is. In fact, it's changed definition since it was first described by Kraepelin many, many years ago. And that's true of schizoaffective disorder, which actually only became a disorder since I became a doctor. It wasn't even a, it wasn't even a disorder before 1980.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it wasn't even, it became an order. Like, let's try that. When you don't know the difference between bipolar and schizophrenia, which none of us do, then let's just give it schizoaffective. And then that'll be a wastebasket for, I don't know if this is bipolar or this is schizophrenia. So we call it schizoaffective.
And then they could go the rest of their lives being on constant medications or different medications.
Right.
I mean,
yeah, they get, you know, then they get probated to the hospital, or they have, you know, they have to have payees, or they can't get jobs, or, you know, severely mentally disabled diagnoses, or they get on disability. It's all sorts of shit happens as soon as you take on that diagnosis. Yeah.
Yeah. There was this famous speaker. She's a doctor too, a clinical psychologist, Patricia Deegan. She had schizophrenia when she was 18 years old. That's when she was diagnosed. And she said that exactly like the same aspects you kind of just mentioned, where like once they started medicating her and they put her in the hospital and granted, she's 18 years old, she was numbed out. She was like a potato on the couch and she could not do anything.
Right. Exactly.
She started smoking, but then once she started slowly getting off the meds, she started doing more things.
Yeah.
Then, yeah.
Exactly. No, these medications, if I tell you, you come in, you're like, doctor, my nose hurts. And I say, oh, that's because you're an elephant. And you're like, oh, that explains everything. And now I've said you're an elephant. You believe your doctor. You now think you're an elephant. You're going to walk around and you're going to say, guess what? I'm so excited. I got my diagnosis. I'm an elephant. And, you know, and that's a little bit far-fetched. But the point is, as soon as you believe your diagnosis, then you become it.
Yes.
And you start acting exactly the way you think someone with schizoaffective disorder should act. And once you get that going on, then you got medications, you got other people agreeing that you got schizoaffective disorder. You're no longer, you know, like you can't be relied upon at work. You might hear voices. You might do something stupid. The truth is we all might hear voices or do something stupid.
Yes.
I don't know about you, but I've done some stupid shit already today. Lots of stupid shit.
Guilty.
Yeah. Me. Yeah.
Well, so, it takes so much away from you, and they give you general assistance or other financial resources to just stay home. Just stay home, sit on your butt on the couch.
Right.
And that's it.
Eat potato chips, collect food stamps. Yep. Sad. Mm-hmm. It's sad. And those people, are those people ready to come off of medicine? I've had some remarkable miracles with people who have had diagnoses of schizophrenia, schizoaffective, bipolar, any condition. When they're ready to come off medicine and lose their diagnosis, we can get them right back to the normal.
But is that's something they internally have to find out for themselves, right?
At some point, what they have to get, and the family has to get it, the caretakers have to get it. We need to have all the holes of the loose leaf paper need to align. But once we get that, it's amazing what's available.
Can I just say, possibly easier said than done, especially getting the family on board?
Well, that's a really good point, because what ends up with the family, and I think this is what you're pointing to, is that there is some investment in having that particular identified patient.
Okay.
Right? Like if my sister's the sick one, at least she's the sick one, and we all can rally around the idea that my sister is the sick one. So if my sister's going to get well, that's going to screw up the whole system. We can't really have that.
Yeah.
So the identified patient is kind of an issue as well. And so even when people get better, we just think, oh my God, she's actually talking now. We can't manage that. She's saying her truth. She's actually telling that her brother used to abuse her. And it's like, oh, we can't have that. You know, so then they just put her out of her misery and give her back on her diagnosis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's powerful stuff right there. It really is.
It really is. It happens all the time, dude. It's happening all the time. Yeah.
Like family secrets.
Family secrets. And, you know, we just blame it on the sick one, whoever we call sick. And then they don't even have to be sick. Most of the time, they're actually often the only well one in the whole family.
Yep.
But everyone else can blame them.
Well, they're all working together. They're all like this, I don't want to say evil team, but like team trying to protect something.
Right.
But their family, they got to look the part too.
Right. Got to look the part too. Right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The part as if they know what the hell's going on in the world. I haven't met anybody who knows what the hell's going on in the world. I don't know about you.
No, and I want to relate a little bit. I used to be a group home worker working with clients, SPMI, severe mental health or persistent mental health. And it's sad because it's, I don't know if it's evil in a sense, but the company's slogan or goal is we want to get you out of the group home and we want you to be a productive member of society and get an apartment, get a job. I tell you what, man, like these guys can, or women, or these clients will say can barely like cook for themselves or even go in the community because again, they have diagnoses like bipolar, schizoaffective and schizophrenia. And even in grad school, I learned that it's like, you can't even have all those diagnoses together because they contradict each other.
Yeah.
But they're given these diagnoses and like the goal is supposed to get them out and working, even though when they're numbed out or again, going through severe mental health issues, which they're not even getting therapy for.
Right. Exactly. No. Yeah. You just assume that they wouldn't respond. So you just give them meds and it makes them worse or gives them other issues.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's a powerful thing, man.
Yep.
Well, Dr. Moss, I just want to say thank you so much for being on my podcast, man. Like a lot of my listeners learned a lot. I learned a lot. Just the way you put things in perspective.
Yeah.
Which is very interesting. And I learned a lot from this.
That's good. Yeah. It's my pleasure. You know, I finally, you know, I made it through the field. I was there for 32 years. In the end, I'm really just a glorified childcare worker. In fact, in the end, I'm just a college dropout. And in the end, really, I'm just someone who wants to learn how to be a master communicator. In the end, I'm just somebody who came to bring joy and peace and love to the family of human beings. And that's who I now get to be. So it's kind of exciting. I'm now a healer and not a doctor. And what a breakthrough. For me, it's really nice to be aligned with who I really am. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, again,
just the voice comes in.
Yeah, just the perspectives you made us all feel here is just awesome.
Thank you.
I also have to ask you, so if any of my listeners want to get a hold of you, is there like a phone number, email they could get a hold of you to contact?
So my book, you know, Find Your True Voice book, findyourtruevoicebook.com. I'll give your listeners, if you're really interested in learning more about me or what I'm up to, then sign up for findyourtruevoicebook.com. I'll actually send you my free book and you get the whole real book that way. Another way to find me is at true-voice.circle.so. It's a circle group that we're forming for people who are really ready to find their true voice and make something of themselves where they might have been, you know, muffled or stifled recently. This is the time, you know, this is a dark night these days and we really have to speak our true selves. And then if you really just want to email me, that's, you know, the most direct way. And that's drfred@welcometohumanity.net. drfred@welcometohumanity.net. And we can set up a discovery call or set up a call to, you know, make sure that there might be a good fit where I can offer some of my services, coaching or otherwise, mastermind or courses that we teach. I have a really good team that I work with, and it would be my pleasure to talk to any of your listeners.
And I'm sure they're going to be honored too. It was awesome, man. And to all my listeners, I will make sure I put all the links in the show notes as well too.
Thank you. Yep. Super awesome.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Moss.
Thank you. My pleasure. All right. Thanks for having me. I'll talk to you later, Jacob. Really been a pleasure.
Well, I just want to thank Dr. Fred Moss and all my BHI listeners for another wonderful episode. Again, I just want to express that the information and content in this episode was not meant to be taken as therapeutic advice. If you do find yourself struggling with any type of mental health issue or addiction issues, please seek the care of a licensed professional therapist or a medical doctor. All right, everyone, thank you and have a good day. Bye.